listening to Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A. Once again, here's your host, DJ Phone.
We are back live at 2:32. We have as our guest right now Scott Smith. He is the president of the Prescott Chamber Player Society. Scott, for someone who is not real familiar with the classics and chamber players, what are some of the differences between what we regard as classical music and chamber music?
That's a really good question. Chamber music is a form of classical music, mm-hmm. but it's primarily for a smaller group of instruments. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, that would be a group that would perform in a smaller context, kind of like in a king's palace, like in a smaller room, or perhaps in someone's home or mm-hmm. in a mansion of a patron.
Oh, okay,
or
sure. Yeah, yeah. And I've gone to brunches several times where there was a chamber orchestra playing, and three, four, five people sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes it can be as few as two people. It can be as many as 20 people.
Yeah.
Typically, now, for us, we range anywhere from 2 to 10.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah. Now, which instruments do you play yourself?
I play the clarinet. Mm-hmm. I'm a clarinetist. So
I have, and I always ask musicians this question. Take me back to the first time you picked up that instrument.
Oh, gosh.
And why'd you choose that one?
I think I chose it because it was handed to me when I started playing in the band in the fifth grade.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? You know, I interviewed Chip Davis, who created Mannheim Steamroller.
Yes.
And I think he played the bassoon when he was in high school.
Oh, okay.
And I said, what on earth would move you to start playing the bassoon? Did uh-huh. you like bassoon uh-huh. music? He said, no, that's what they handed me. I said, if you want to be part of this, that's what you're going to play. Oh, well, okay. And then, of course, he became great at it. So when it comes to the chamber music, of course, you've got a wonderful event coming up. It's
yes,
your 23rd
did.
Annual winter concert of the Prescott Chamber Players. It's coming up very soon.
Yes.
Tell us when and where.
It's actually coming up this Sunday.
Whoa.
At Trinity Presbyterian Church, and that's at 630 Park Avenue in Prescott, just a little ways from downtown.
Isn't that right behind the Safeway store up there?
Yes, it is. Yes, you go on past
the
square.
Oh, the acoustics in there. I have
the acoustics
there.
Are amazing.
Yeah, now
just
I'm
completely
yeah,
amazing.
Oh, yeah. You know, you've got a great program here. Why don't you go down the program, tell us some of the offerings we will hear and some of the people involved in making that music.
Well, we have a variety. We have about 10 or 12 different compositions.
Mm-hmm.
We have a clarinet sonata by Paul Hindemith, who is a German composer. We have a duet for clarinet and piano by Robert Schumann, called his Fantasy Pieces. We have pieces for flute and for bassoon, piano. Let me get out the exact thing here. We even have a little bit of jazz thrown in.
Nice.
We don't do, our focus is primarily classical chamber music from the 18th through the 20th centuries.
Sure.
But we do branch out sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
We do a little blues even. We do a little klezmer on occasion.
Okay, explain that term for me.
Well, klezmer is an ethnic type of Jewish music.
Really?
Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, yeah, of course.
That type of music with violin and clarinet. But primarily it's classical music. We're doing a piece here called In Ireland. That's with our flutist and pianist. Here's another piece, Snappy Top and Bottom. That's
that,
kind of
that
a more
title
jazzy.
Alone would
yeah,
get my ears perked
great,
up.
That's a great little piece.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing a piece from the 1700s by George Philip Telemann. That's another area we kind of branch out. Sometimes we even have members of the group that play on period or original instruments, which mm-hmm. is kind of a treat
Ooh,
for
well,
our
yeah.
audience. So.
Yeah. And when it comes to you to choosing these pieces, are there any, how many of these composers that you're playing in this particular concert coming up, what percentage would you think are Americans, Europeans? Is there anything contemporary when it comes to chamber music?
That's another good question, DJ. I think a lot of chamber music from the 20th century might be considered more contemporary. someone like a Hindemith or a Stravinsky, Schoenberg, you know, people like that. There are a lot of really good American composers that have written some very fine chamber music as well. And they tend to have some more jazz or elements like that in it.
When it comes to some of these classical pieces going back to the 1800s and maybe with European roots, how would it feel, and explain if you've already been in these shoes, how would it feel to play that music in the very town, in the very cathedral or church where the composer played it 200 years ago?
Oh, gosh, that is a thrill. My wife and I actually went to Venice a couple years ago, and we got to be in the church where Vivaldi did the Four Seasons, and it was amazing.
Isn't that something?
Kind of gave me goosebumps.
Yeah, I can imagine. Now, are all of these pieces strictly instrumental?
They are strictly instrumental. On occasion, we do have a vocalist, but that generally it's instrumental.
So let me ask you this. Have you ever tried writing music yourself?
I have, but I'm not very good at it.
Well, but close enough. Let me ask you this. How do you come up with a title for an instrumental piece? Because there's no lyrics.
I guess that's really up to the composer. You're trying to give a hint of what the music may be about. For instance, that piece I mentioned earlier, Snappy Top and Bottom.
Kind of self-descriptive.
Self-descriptive. Yeah. It gives you a little bit of a clue.
So take me back to your education in music, your first interests. First of all, and I always ask musicians this, when you were a little kid, what kind of music did you hear in the home growing up?
My mother was a great lover of classical music.
Really?
And she bought me an album for clarinet and orchestra early on. It was by an English clarinetist named Jack Brymer. And so I just wore that record out on my turntable. I came to love classical clarinet music.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in our organization kind of had similar experiences.
Yeah.
They grew up listening to it.
Sure.
And kind of fell in love with it. And so that's primarily the focus of our group. We do it because we love it.
Sure.
We enjoy to perform. It's a friendship thing. We have a lot of great time together rehearsing and learning about the music together.
You know, what really piques my interest about a lot of contemporary and pop and rock musicians, as they get older, it seems an awful lot of them really finally start appreciating the timeless classics that have sustained musicians for 200 or 300 years. And it all comes back to one thing: why it's so timeless. Why do you think this music is so timeless?
I think it's timeless because it's written at a very high level. There's a lot going on within the piece. Oftentimes, people will hear a piece of music and it has just a beautiful melody, but the construction within the music is amazing too.
Sure,
it's just genius. It's like a painter. It's like a Picasso or something painting something. And as you analyze the music and rehearse it, you come to appreciate the structure of it even more. So there's no one easy answer.
Yeah.
It has to do with the construction of the internal construction of the music, the melody, how the parts play off against one another.
See, that's one of the things that always interests me when someone is writing original music. The lyrics I can understand, because an awful lot of times you're writing from personal experience. When it comes to creating original melodies and which instruments to provide those, that is so beyond my pay grade. I don't know how people come up with that.
Yeah, and the instrumentation, you touched on that. The instrumentation is key, too. If you're writing something in chamber music, you have to know when the different voices trade off. And if you have a true duet, like if you're an instrumentalist and you're playing with the piano, there's kind of a give and take. The melodies interweave, and you hand off to the other soloist, and that person picks up the line, and then they come back together. It's just genius in the construction. And that's what we enjoy, too. We research a lot of music, and when we find a hidden piece of music, it's like finding a nugget of gold.
Yeah.
It's just like buried treasure.
In chamber music, is there room for improvisation?
Pretty much, I would say no. Now, there are elements within chamber music. You'll have a section which could be a cadenza, which is a little freer, and you may have a chord structure, and you can improvise within that, but mm-hmm. it's not improvisation, kind of like a jazz player
right.
or something. Yeah.
You know, I mentioned, I asked you before about how you first came become acquainted with classical music, hearing your mother's love for it. It's amazing how many people in, you know, baby boomers, their very first exposure to the classics, and I'm talking traditional classic music, believe it or not, was the Looney Tunes cartoon of Bugs Bunny directing the Hollywood Bowl Orchestra.
Yep. Yep.
Now, here's one that'll surprise a lot of people. When I went to the Hollywood Bowl for the first time 7 years ago, they have a wonderful museum at the Hollywood Bowl, and they run that cartoon on a continuous loop of Bugs directing the orchestra. Of course, Fantasia, Disney's animated classics.
Yeah, exactly.
That gave a lot of kids their first exposure to it.
And I think the general public as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things within the music we do mm-hmm. which people can have memories of. They mm-hmm. may have heard a fragment of it earlier and not know where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, our instrumentation will have flutes and oboes and clarinets and pianos. And
So tell us about some of the people who will be performing at this special concert, which, by the way, comes up at 2 o'clock, and that's this Sunday, right?
Yes, sir.
At Trinity Presbyterian Church.
2 p.m., Trinity Presbyterian Church.
Mm-hmm.
The membership of our group, we have performing members. And a lot of really fine musicians within that group. We have about 25 performing members currently.
Mm-hmm.
Have about 12 what we call associate members, and they're people that are in the group and love to come to our monthly meetings but don't perform publicly. Mm-hmm. But we kind of run the gamut of age and experience. We have players as young as 25, but we have a player who's almost 90.
Really?
And a phenomenal pianist.
Isn't that something? And it just never goes away, does it?
It never goes. And the love of it never goes away
sure.
either. But I guess that's what I'd like to emphasize. We're a diverse group from different backgrounds, but we're united in our love of music. So.
Mm-hmm. So who are some of these people we'll be hearing Sunday?
Well, myself, I'll be performing, but we'll have a fine flutist named Beverly Chesterby will be performing. Jackie Stewart is one of our fine pianists. Lisa Rudy is playing piccolo. We have a very fine bassoonist, Ginger Scudder, who will be playing. Elizabeth Johnson is a fine, fine clarinetist, and she'll be doing the Schumann fantasy pieces. So various people. We have Suzanne Fisher. Suzanne was the founder of the group back in 1997.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So, that pretty much covers it. I apologize if I left anyone out. So.
Now you, of course, will be playing clarinet, and that is in the Mendelssohn piece, correct?
Actually, I'm doing a piece by Felix Drosica, who's a German composer,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm doing a thing by Paul Hindemith.
There we go.
And then I'm playing in a woodwind quintet, actually, five players.
So how often do you rehearse?
Oh, gosh, as much as we can. That's one of the beauties of living in Prescott and being here. We just love the music, and we rehearse as often as we can. Well, pretty much whatever is required to have a good performance.
Let me ask you this. 3 years ago, I checked off one of the bucket list items, and I went to a concert in Phoenix by the great Johnny Mathis. And Johnny had a full orchestra with him that he's been carrying with him on tour for 20-something years. They've been playing his songs for 20 years, yet they were all using sheet music. Do you need sheet music for something you've played probably thousands of times?
It provides a little more security in the midst of a performance. Quite often on the sheet music, too, you're making notations to yourself to kind of remind yourself what you'd like to do. Now, if you have a concert pianist who's done it a million times, they often will do it from memory.
See, that's what I was wondering, why they don't do that. But that's, again, that's a layman's.
But in chamber music, too, you have all these different things going on as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the parts, you know, cooperating with one another. So we need to know where one another are.
Yeah. Well, if there's anything I've learned from musicians, they are really fussy about their instrument. Tell us about your clarinet.
Oh, gosh. I have a 1976 era Buffet clarinet. I have many clarinets, but the two I use for performing are a B-flat clarinet and then an A clarinet. That's the key. It's the standard set that you would use in an orchestra. And they're really good performance instruments. They're very nice. But over the years, my one horn that I use the most is needs a little more work to keep it maintained and so forth.
But, when you first started playing for real on the clarinet at a young age, who were some of your heroes? Who would you have liked to have been?
Oh, gosh. My dream would be Benny Goodman, you know. Benny Goodman, just any of the fine orchestral clarinetists. I mentioned Jack Brimer. Harold Wright's another great clarinetist. Years ago, I was in Boston and got to see Harold Wright empty the spit out of his horn, and I thought that was a wonderful moment.
What kind of maintenance do you have to do for an instrument to keep it at the top of its game?
Well, there's a lot of moving parts.
Okay.
You have springs and pads and reeds and different equipment you have to keep up. We keep all the little fine things adjusted, the little pivots and screws. And your reed players are always trying to find their perfect reed.
So. I remember talking to Dennis Hauser, one of our classical singers here, about not only how important it is to maintain his voice, but tell us how important that razor-sharp ear is for a musician.
It's very important. You have to know when your pitch is high, when your pitch is low. You have to know if the person you're playing with, it tends to be high or low. And you try to match that. So it's not always a matter of being exactly what the, you know, the machine says you should be. It's a matter of doing a good performance and matching with the other performers you're playing with.
You know, I mentioned before going to the Hollywood Bowl 7 years ago. I went to see Herb Alpert. Remember the Tijuana Brass?
Oh, absolutely.
He'll be coming to Yavapai College in February. Yeah. And what struck me about his history is that after he sold A&M Records, he donated $30 million to, I believe it was UCLA, to create a world music curriculum. How important is it to keep this legendary music going for young musicians?
Oh, I think it's essential. It's one of the great art forms in Western civilization. And there's a whole bunch of music out there that for us in this age seems undiscovered. You know, you may find something by a really obscure composer, which is just a real gem. And just would make an amazing performance. So it's essential to keep it going. And it's good for kids coming up in the schools and stuff as well to learn that. And it's because there's a lot of history, and it's just a very deep area of music. And it's never-ending what you can learn about it.
I interview a lot of actors from the Prescott Center for the Arts, and I always ask them if they can watch a movie and not sit there as a judge with a background in acting. Can you simply enjoy a concert as a fan and not go, they shouldn't have done that, or I would have done it this way? Are you more discerning than the average fan?
Oh, gosh, I would hope I am. I'm not sure I always am. But, yes, I can sit back and enjoy because you know what goes into it.
Yeah.
And it just takes anybody that gets up and performs, you know, they usually put a lot of effort into it, a lot of preparation. So, but short answer, yes, it is possible to sit back and enjoy.
You know, I was really surprised last year to find out how many great piano players, when they're on tour, they don't bring their own piano shipped with them. They bring the piano that's in the venue. Can you imagine going on tour and having to play whatever clarinet is handed to you?
No. It would be very difficult.
And that's why I was so surprised to hear that.
Well, I I think for the people playing the smaller instruments, it's kind of personalized. You'll have a particular mouthpiece. You'll have a particular reed you like,
sure,
a particular horn. And it would be really difficult to pick up someone else's, you know, equipment and do it like you want to do it.
When I was in St. Louis, there was a news story about a St. Louis Symphony violinist whose Stradivarius was stolen, and they listed the approximate value as $4 million. That would surprise some people. $4 million. What makes it that valuable?
Oh, gosh. I think in that area, the string instruments, you know, it would be the sound, the wood, you know, the particular resonance of the wood and so forth. So,
ooh, amazing. Well, once again, the concert is this Sunday at 2 p.m. at Trinity Presbyterian Church in Prescott. Is there a web page or a phone number people can learn more?
Yes, there is. Our web address is prescottchamberplayers.com. And you go there and we have all sorts of information about our group. We have information about past concerts, upcoming concerts, and also have contact information for anyone who might be interested in joining.
And we thank Scott Smith, the president of the Prescott Chamber Player Society. Great talking to you, Scott. Thanks for coming in on Q&A.